MMA Roadshow, episode number 293. My name is John Morgan, and Cole Coffee is with me.
Can you believe it?
We are back together again, my friend, live from the greatest country in the world. The good old USA.
It's still one country. As far as we know, it has not fully dived into a civil war splitting us.
Enjoy the United States while they're still united
still
for
united.
Now. Nah, man, we're here at the Casa de Cold Coffee here in Las Vegas, sitting down on a record-setting warm Thursday afternoon. I believe
that's what they said.
Young lady said at the weather
nice
report.
Blonde weather
the
meteorologist.
Yeah,
at
she
Channel
said it
3.
Record-setting. It's warm. We're in the first week of November, but still kind of feels like, I wouldn't say summer, but, you know, late summer maybe, early
it's
fall.
82 degrees right now.
That's nice, man.
That's nice. 82 Fahrenheit, and for you that use that other system, 28.
Not bad for Thursday evening on the first week in November.
It's crazy, though, because now that it's getting the end of the year, like, the timing is throwing me off because it's getting really dark outside.
Yeah.
And it feels like at 5 o'clock, it should not be anywhere this dark.
Yeah, we just had the time change. It's about 5 p.m. as we're sitting down together. Together, by the way, for the first time since September 17th, bro.
Wow.
Episode number 286.
Has it been that long?
Yes, that was the last time we sat down and did an episode together. That's how long it's been.
Wow.
How crazy is that, man?
A lot of shit's happened.
A lot of shit has happened. And, of course, we're just talking about MMA, really.
Yeah.
It's all we're talking about when we talk about everything that's happened. First of all, let's give a shout-out to our man, Jay Gargiulo. He's the one that's providing the frosty beverages this evening. And we've had a few of them already as I slur over that. But thank you, Jay Gargiulo. Got a little bit of a little bit of whiskey.
Yeah.
A little bit of a award-winning Pabst Blue Ribbon as well. Just, you know.
That's how you do it.
Just, hey, when you haven't been together for 7 weeks and you're getting together, you got to go big.
It's funny. I was online chatting with some guys I play an online game with, and they're all like, what's your drink of choice? And everybody's throwing out all these, like, super, super expensive-sounding things. I didn't really double-check, so I assumed they were expensive. Maybe they weren't all that expensive. But they're like, so what's your choice? I was like, give me a JMO and a PBR, and I'm good to go. And they're just like, what's PBR? I said, it's award-winning. Go look it up. Just left it there. Because a lot of these dudes that I do online game with, they're all around the world.
Is this like 9-year-olds playing Fortnite or something?
Yeah, that's it. I was like, hey, kid, it's not Kool-Aid. Step off. Go ask your mom.
Oh, man, too funny. Yeah, no, it's been a while, man. It's good to be back together, man. I know it's crazy. And by the way, should give a big shout-out to Oscar Willis from the Mac Life, man. He spent a lot of time over the last, you know, couple months or so, dedicating his time and volunteering his time to help out with the podcast. So definitely appreciate him.
Yes, thank you, Oscar, for stopping your jet ski excursions.
he had to cut into his jet ski time.
You know, the stills time. Is that the right? Is that
still,
the right
name? Stills
time.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciate that, Oscar.
They helped us out in Abu Dhabi. They shortened the happy hour. It used to be all day happy hour, and they trimmed down the happy hour. That's why we weren't there quite as much as we.
How did that help you out?
Because I wouldn't stay there and buy full beers. Yeah, we would go back to the room and, like, drink there. It didn't really help anything at all. It just changed our location, basically, is what it changed.
That's so funny. They're like, how can we get rid of this dude? Or we're literally going to see him in a booth for 5 or 6. How many weeks was it?
5 weeks.
5 weeks. They're like, if we don't shorten it, he's going to be in that booth for 5 weeks straight, 12 hours a day.
Yeah, we still were there for 5 weeks straight, just not 12 hours a day. Just not 12 hours a day.
How long would you say you clocked in? I mean, it's great. I know it's where you guys worked from because internet was bad or whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
How long would you say that you were in those?
Yeah, a solid 3 to 4 hours a day.
Okay. Yeah. That's pretty solid.
Solid 3 to 4 hours a day.
That's solid.
We didn't do too bad. And the alcohol that we brought over there got used up very quickly. So when we go back, which I'm assuming we'll go back in February, we're just going to up the imports.
Did you bring from the States, or did they have a duty free there?
No, I brought from the States. I bought a couple of 175s of Tito's. I need another 175.
What's
at
a 175? Is that like a half gallon?
I think so. The one point the
big jug looking
big
thing?
Jug handle. Yeah,
Lord.
I brought two of those of vodka.
You never bring a fucking luggage. You brought a luggage probably.
I had to check in just to bring vodka.
Jesus Christ!
But dude, it's like $12 a beer there, man. You can't. You like.
That's so ridiculous.
It's crazy.
That's so ridiculous.
Fight Island.
See, I would have the excuse that I always bring an extra luggage. You literally brought luggage just so you could bring jugs of vodka. No shame in that. No shame.
No shame. And we put it to good use as well. All right. By the way, all right. You know what? I wasn't going to bring this up, but I'm going to bring it up now. So you're talking about Fight Island, right? That's the bubble for the UFC. I'm watching right now. Bellator's on. I'm watching the main card of Bellator. They're at the Fight Sphere, right? That's their bubble. We're going back to the 2300 Arena for Cage Fury Fighting Championships. 2300 Arena in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. That's going to it hosted our show in August. It hosted our show last month in October. It's hosting our show this month in November. So it's kind of our little bubble, right? We were going there over and over.
Mm-hmm.
How about this? You got Fight Island. You got the Fight Sphere.
Okay, okay.
I'm going to call 2300 Arena the Philly Shell. Like the famous boxing defense. The Philly Shell.
Okay, okay,
you know what
okay,
I mean?
Okay, okay, I'll let you. You know, at this point.
I was going to let that marinate, but I could see you, it wasn't registering with you at all.
Okay, well, pardon me. I was thinking Philadelphia might be burned down here in a little bit.
Oh, well, that's a good point.
You know, Pennsylvania might not be on the map here in a little bit.
I might need a passport to get to Pennsylvania.
That's
here
it.
In a couple of weeks.
We are the country of Pennsylvania. We talk like this for some reason.
Doesn't sound like a single person in Pennsylvania.
Well, this is because the new ones, all the new Pennsylvania immigrants that would be coming into the country.
Would that be crazy if it's just like all of a sudden like we split and we had like President Joe Biden led one country and President Donald Trump led another?
Good Lord. When you heard the stories of like or at least when you read the history books of when the Civil War, when the states were literally divided.
And you're like, bro, what was so wrong with them that they couldn't figure it out?
I'm like, or just imagine, like, you know, I'm sure that was just crazy, crazy. And that was when they just had, like, some fucking long rifles and some cannons and stuff. The damage that people could do now. But just, not that, please, we joke about this being a very, very stupid stuff between just two guys having drinks. But it's just crazy to see it so divided. But when you hear people say that, and you know, I saw somebody the other day, an economic advisor talking about the same sort of thing of that, like the market was playing itself out, that it made sense that to split the economy into two different economies and blah blah blah. I was like, what the fuck
are
you drinking? I don't know what this dude was just fucking saying, but at the point, I was just all I could focus on the fact was that in his mind, the world was so divided in what was happening. When I say the world, the U.S. was so divided that there were two different ideologies of what the president, what Trump's idea and what they wanted the financial system of America to be. And then when they look at, you know, everybody wants to say Joe and his people, they want to take all your money. They want to take it. So you have to pay into these systems to take care of everybody else. And you're not going to be able to stockpile your own money away, blah, blah, blah. So the best thing to do is just to have two different sort of, you know, it just started. And at that point, it just put that image in my head that we are so divided that if it ever actually, you know, did get to the point where fighting was happening, and you're watching these polls, Langs, and we'll get off of this in a second. It's just so crazy because this literally
it's unfolding right in front of us.
One is the most crazy shit I've ever seen, you know, when you see these poll things. And, you know, I was telling John, I like to keep the two major media outlets open so I could see how both are covering, because they usually be in different areas of the U.S. as well. So I have Fox News on one side, and I got like the CNN on the other, and you're seeing these massive people trying to, you know, just almost they're mobbing outside of these polling or these locations where they're actually counting the things, and it looks like they're gonna storm the gates, you know. And it's just like
it's
when you think
scenes,
of there's an
man.
Actual attack on, you know, the how our system is actually run. And I could see where some of them might be saying, well, no, the attack's happening on the inside. We need to get in there and do it. And then the other people are like, look at all these fucking nutsos outside trying to just stop this process from happening.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
it's just, it's
if you
scary.
Storm of, again, and not this will be the most politics we ever talk, but it's literally our presidential election is unfolding as we do this. And shout out to all the international friends of ours who have reached out to me that, like, going like, what's going on over there, bro? Like,
dude, been tripping me out. Like, the TV's been showing, like, and I understand why, because especially with the way our financial system, the dollar is tied so
right.
closely in all these countries, they're showing bars and all these other stuff, and people are glued to the screen watching this. I normally absolutely, I just, I can't, I normally can't stomach this shit.
Right.
Because I'm just like, oh, it's just two people fucking yelling at each other, yep. yada, yada. But at this point, you can't ignore it. It's everywhere you look. But to see that, yes, even in other countries, they're completely just caught up in this.
What's this crazy? So, like, you're talking about, like, these protests that are happening outside these polling stations. Man, if people were to rush inside there, and I mean, isn't that kind of like contaminating?
You would think.
You know what I'm saying? Like, at that point, like, can you trust like, any of the results that came in there?
I wonder if that's why they're thinking of doing it. You know, it's like, if that was your main thing, if you went in there and contaminated this area, do they then have to invalidate everything?
And I'm sorry that contamination is the word that's coming to mind, because I'm sure there's
a better
word.
Well, that's why
we're
not political people. But that's why we don't have a political fucking podcast.
In the age of COVID-19 and Fight Island and the Philly Shell. See, I'm going to work that in there. it just seems weird.
I got nothing better than that.
You see?
You know, I mean, I would think of something along the lines of like a Philly sandwich. Like, you know, but like what something food related that's Philly. You know,
but it's got to be like the protection. So it's
shell, like the cheese covering,
like the fight sphere, the fight island, the Philly shell. You know what I mean? It's protection from COVID-19. It's
I
our
like
bubble.
It.
It's
I
our
like
bubble.
It.
See,
like
it's growing
it.
On you. It's growing like on it. You. Philly shell. You see what I'm saying? It's like a shell, but it's also
every
a boxing
time you say
defense.
Philly, though, I keep thinking of a fucking Philly sandwich, and I'm thinking like, do you go to the cheese sauce or do you have the provolone on your Philly? Like, which one do you do?
I don't know.
Isn't that the age old story between like which the Phillies? You got the old school with like
I think
the.
So.
The nacho cheese. I'm not sure who does the nacho cheese. Is that Geno's or somebody's? And I can't remember what the other name or the other big one that they go head-to-head. But that's my kind of fight. I like that shit. Because I would go
that's
all
your kind
in
of political
on both
fight
sides.
Right
yeah,
there?
That's my kind of political fight. I will go.
You're bipartisan on that one, bro? You're bipartisan, bro.
I am completely bipartisan. I am bipartisan times two in that instance. Because I would buy two of each.
So Bellator 251 is going on right now while we sit here. I did want to share something real quick because it reminded me something about Nevada. So Derek Anderson picked up a knockout win over Kilis Mota to start out the main card. And it was kind of a wild sequence. If you didn't watch it, we'll have a story up at MMA Junkie if it's not there already. Well, it will be by the time you hear this. But it was kind of a weird sequence where Mota was knocked down and tried to get back up. And as he was scrambling up, Derek Anderson hit him with a head kick. And it looked like that Mota was still a downed opponent. But when they went to the instant replay, you could see that he wasn't a downed opponent. The timing was just right, that all that was on the ground was a hand, actually, because of the way he was a hand and a foot, I should say, but not 2 feet. So he had 2 points of contact, not three. So anyway, he said he couldn't continue because that was actually ruled a knockout win for Derek Anderson. So instant replay used pretty well in Bellator tonight. And you may have noticed that the UFC has instant replay as well. I shouldn't say the UFC. I should say
Commission.
Nevada State Athletic Commission, which is hosting UFC. So they've been using replay.
But that's still – I'm glad you brought that up. That still stops the fight, correct? Or
no.
It,
so now they're saying they can use all the – so that's why I wanted to say that. So so it got introduced last week, I think, was the first time they talked about it on the broadcast. I reached out to the Nevada State Athletic Commission to ask them if I could do an interview with them so we could get the details. Because they talked about it on the broadcast, but it was very like bang, bang. It wasn't explaining.
It gave no explanation. It was just like, oh, the new rule says that they could go to the thing. But it didn't say anything about whether it stopped the fight or
that's
anything.
That's right. So I'm trying to work on an interview with them. The commission reps told me, they're like, listen, appreciate your interest. We're not ready to talk about it publicly yet, but we're getting there.
They're still working it out,
but it's good. It's a positive thing. They're trying to move forward.
True, but you don't roll it out if you're not ready to fucking have an interview about it.
Well, maybe right? So. Maybe they're testing it behind the scenes a little bit. But I will say this:
if you're testing it in live environment, it's going.
Well, that's true. I mean,
it's
you've already
happening.
Told the broadcast
you put,
partner.
You put it into a production environment. That's like I used to do computer work. So say if you do an upgrade to a thing, but once you and put it into the production environment, it's live.
It's not really a beta test anymore at that point, right?
It's not a beta test. You're out live. So if you put it out in an actual live spectacle, at that point, I would think that you knew what you were doing. Like,
well,
that's not the right place.
They definitely do know what they're doing. They just said they weren't ready to do an interview about it yet. But I will say this. So one thing they're doing is they are assigning a replay official to every single bout. So, you know, you've seen those bout sheets before, and it has, like, the judge assignment, the referee assignment. Now they have a replay official as well. So that replay official, again, this is what I want to talk to him about. What exactly is that replay official looking for? But does the replay official have the right to get the referee's attention, or does the replay official have to wait for the referee to come to them? Those are the details I want to know.
In the NFL, I believe, can't they can initiate a stop. on their own.
Well, I think at least in the final 2 minutes, of course, it's the replay officials that
they have the authority at 2 minutes.
Yeah. So that's those are the details that I want to get from the Nevada Athletic Commission. They're not ready to talk about it yet. But I just want to say, so if you heard mention of the broadcast, I'm trying to get the details. Yeah. I'm trying to get the operational standards. I'm trying to figure it out, and hopefully they'll be ready to talk about it soon. But well, look, you're right about what you're saying. Maybe it should have rolled out if they weren't 100% ready. But I don't want to chastise them too much because I think this is a good move.
It is a good move, but it's just, you know, it's funny when you think, like, okay, we're going to put it live in an environment where it's life or death in a sense, where somebody's actually getting beat up, but you're afraid to do an interview about it. If you're afraid to announce that maybe – that there's things to work out, I understand that, but they shouldn't be afraid to do that. Because if you're willing to put it in play, you know, not that the fight's, you know, but this is their livelihood. You know, this can make or break somebody's career.
Maybe they didn't mean for it to get on the broadcast. Maybe their idea was, hey, me, you know, us and the UFC are going to test this thing and see how it works. Maybe the UFC dropped the ball and put that information out what they weren't supposed to.
But it'd be really weird if all of a sudden they didn't say something and they used it and people are like, wait. Why are we going back into action? You know, like, it's supposed to be done at this point. Well, sorry, we forgot to mention that the Nevada Commission has decided that we're going to blah, blah. Because then everybody would say, oh, they're fibbing it after the fact.
Right.
So it's probably good that they got out beforehand to say something. But you figure if they had all this time and they decided to pull the trigger on it, they should have at least a rough guideline of what it is. And if they say that, hey, it's still a work in progress, that's cool. But they should still have a pecking order of this needs to be met for it to be used, because that's already being used, right? I guarantee every one of them knows you can't either invoke it unless this happens or this happens. I'm sure that stuff already exists. So maybe they're just double checking because they don't want somebody to point out, you know, where they're forgetting something or whatever. But you're right. Whatever.
I am trying to figure out. But that's what I'm saying. I don't want to come down on it too hard because – I think this is what happens sometimes in this sport and in a lot of places, right? Like, everybody's afraid to move forward because they're afraid of this type of discussion, so they don't do anything. I want to applaud them for saying, let's move forward. I agree. Maybe it could have been handled a little bit better, but I'm trying to get the details. But I don't want to come down too hard on it because I've seen for so many years covering the sport that I think people are afraid of being criticized, so they don't move forward at all. They just stay on status quo. And so I appreciate what they're doing right now and saying, hey, we're at least trying something new.
I mean, I wonder if they could, like, set up, like, a monthly meeting where they talk about things, where they're, like, working things out, and then they open it up for discussion. And they say, hey, are there any comments from anybody here? We're not going to maybe answer what you say, but if you have a comment or something, we will let you talk about it.
All right, you know what's funny? I'm glad that you brought that up, actually, because that actually brings up something that I wasn't planning on talking about, but it's a good point. I've been struggling with this for a long time, and so anybody that listens to the show, I would love for them to chime in and tell me what they think. So this whole marijuana thing, you know, we had a couple suspensions the other day.
It's ridiculous.
I'm so tired of seeing guys lose any money and lose any time on the sidelines for marijuana. I get it. Now, and I've said this 100 times. Now, if you're impaired on the night of the fight, absolutely. But we don't, you know, we don't test for alcohol metabolites from a month ago or from a week ago. You know what I mean? And that's what,
because they're not present.
Well, that's why they're not present. But these show up. You know what I mean? Yeah. The marijuana metabolites have a tendency to stick around
because it's fat soluble.
Exactly. So I do agree. Like, I think that the fighters should be evaluated. And somebody, man, I wasn't planning on talking about this. I would have had it brought. Somebody told me that the Canadian mining industry has a saliva test that shows, like, kind of instant type results or whatever. So I would love to see something like that.
They don't want people just fucking chiefing out down in the mines or
exactly,
something.
Exactly. I guess not.
I'm like, bro, you've been down there for 40 minutes, for 4 hours. I haven't heard nothing. Yeah. But I'm envisioning in my head they still got pickaxes or something. I haven't heard anything cling on the wall.
Like, they're just rolling down there in carts with their pickaxe.
And just hitting against the wall, trying to find
that
gold.
Six shooter on their side. Yeah, no.
Where's that woman with the water? I'm getting awful parched down here.
I imagine.
But at least I got weed.
I imagine they progressed a little bit.
The canary stoned again. Well,
the Canadian mining industry is just years in the past. Years in the past. Sorry, Canadian miner friend that was trying to be really nice to me. But,
oh, wait, was he a miner?
No, I think so. He was saying in the
Well, they're also very handsome and very, very well hung.
He was saying
and their children are very smart and their wives are all very attractive.
There you go. So what he was saying is that's what they use, and I'd like to know more about that. So my thing is this. You shouldn't be impaired. And that's just fighter safety right there. Now, there used to be this argument, man, when Nick Diaz got in trouble years and years ago, the argument was, oh, he was able to endure too much damage because he was under the influence. He was able to endure more damage than a normal person would be. And I just always thought that was the dumbest argument, because literally every fighter in the world that I've ever talked to is like, dude, if my opponent wants to be stoned when we go out there,
yeah,
let him be stoned, dude, so he can take a few more punches with that and deal with the pain. His reaction time is going to be slow.
That's it.
His,
it's a give and take at that point. Because, yes, if you're maybe feeling no pain, which is like the, oh, man, I'm cool, feel no pain, but literally your brain's moving slower.
Yeah.
I think most of them would take that.
So that's it. So you can't be under the influence, and I think that's just a fighter safety thing. But because you smoked 48 hours ago, 72 hours ago, 96 hours ago, that to me is dumb, because we know that, honestly, in terms of dealing with the physical pain that these athletes have to go through, the mental stress that these guys have to go through, it's probably the best thing out there. It's better for their body than alcohol. It's way better than prescription narcotics and that sort of thing.
Like, the fucking pharmaceuticals that they want fight, well, granted, most of them have to really watch what they're doing, because who knows what's going to go. They want to make sure they don't test, but typically as Americans and most people out there in the systems, they say, take this pharmaceutical, take this pharmaceutical. Where if you smoke some weed, it clears up a lot of shit and it alleviates a lot of pain, a lot of other medical issues out there. You would rather they do something like that.
Would much rather do something like that.
So yeah, it's that's just crazy. I mean, it's one thing, though. If you ever, like, go through a hotel that has UFC corners and cornermen and staff on some of these events.
The host hotel here.
every fucking UFC hotel just reeks of weed. It's pretty awesome, because, like, especially, like, I don't quarantine anymore.
Oh, you know, that's right. You
don't
have to quarantine.
Quarantine.
Let me just say that when you go quarantine, maybe some people might be doing a little herbal remedies.
You might get a contact buzz walking through the hallways.
All right, so full circle to where I came back to. This is something that I think is important. I think it's something that needs to be addressed. And I don't blame the commission for suspending people. That's the rules that are on their books. But I feel like the rules need to be changed. And I have often thought during that, at every athletic commission meeting here in Las Vegas, they open it and end it with an opportunity for public address. Like, you can say anything you want. The commission cannot address you, so you can't ask them questions, because I guess you can, but they can't answer you, so you'd be asking nobody. But you can say whatever you want, and they give you, you know, they'll limit your time if you're going on some huge diatribe. But if you want to jump in and speak 30 seconds, 60 seconds, they'll give you that platform. And I've often thought that I should jump in there and just say, listen, you know, John Morgan, been covering sport for a long time. Listen, I understand what the genesis of this rules were, but times have changed. Public opinion on this has changed. This is the healthiest alternative for the athletes that are involved in the sports. If we really are about, you know, athlete health and safety, I believe this would be a move in the right direction versus the wrong direction. You know, just lay out something like that. But I always feel like, as a journalist, it's not my place to do that. I feel like it's my place to just sit back, observe, and write about and talk about what happens, but not necessarily to get that directly involved.
Maybe do it on a day when there's no coverage. You're calling in just as a concerned citizen.
Well, no, I mean, I could do it on my day off or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, that's no big deal. But if I'm not working, I guess I'm technically working. But I just always wonder if that's really the right thing to do. Because, you know, I could write a piece about it. And I thought, well, I can just write an open letter to the commission. But that doesn't mean they ever read it. That doesn't mean they ever see it. So, you know, that's doing something. But is it really doing something as direct as saying, look, I've been covering the sport a long time. Yeah. I've talked to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of athletes. I've talked to them about their particular situations, and I'm telling you, this would be an improvement for everybody involved. Let's get with the times. Look at the way the laws are changing across the United States. Let's make the change and get this done. But I feel like there's some kind of, like, journalistic thing inside of me that says that is out of line for me to do, which I know is crazy, because now it seems like the idea of journalists is to just stir up stuff and be the hot take guy.
I can see that, but I also think, you know, I don't see before I forget the thought, the difference of writing it to them and then doing it on the actual hearing is that, or their commission meeting, is all those meetings are taped.
Right.
So your comment would actually be in a sense, a public record that's there attached to that meeting, should anybody ever go back. Let's listen to the minutes of this or whatever. So you'd be on the record. You could send a letter and it might get dumped in the fucking spam slot and it never goes to whatever, you know, without anything. So there is that and that. But I can see your point that, you know, is that a journalist point to get in it, but it's a logical discussion that I think even outside of whatever you do, I think a doctor, I think anybody can make the discussion that let's look at how society is right now. Let's look at what's going on. This clearly is something that society has come, you know, did a big giant 180 on and says, hey, this is not that bad. And if it's legal in the thing, can we maybe go back and revisit the policy?
Right.
I think you should probably look to revisit the policies. And I don't see would there would be anything, especially anything from our organization, I wouldn't think that they would be like, you know, here's whatever. I mean,
I wonder. I've never talked to the powers to be. I battle with them. This crosses my mind a lot.
It's worth having a discussion. I think right now, especially their main thing is, I know, you know, just to go peel behind the curtain, other stuff, you know, even though we are free to say whatever the hell we want and things we want to do, you also got to be careful in the sense that you represent a brand. You know, when you're, and this is not just us represent a media outlet. This is for any of you. You all, as citizens of American of the United States, sorry for everybody everywhere else. I'm not sure how it is where you are, but you have the right to speak your
greatest
mind.
Greatest country on earth.
Greatest country on earth, y'all. Wait, where's my gun at? It's right there, by the way.
Greatest two countries on earth.
Great. You have the right to say whatever, but you still, within that means, it doesn't mean they can't stop you, but you still work for any of you that work for anybody, you represent a brand.
Right.
So you have to, in a sense, watch that what you say. So even if you think that you're speaking as your own self, you do represent something. So it's probably not a bad idea just to say, hey, this is how I feel on this one particular thing. Just to at least cover your butt,
yeah,
or whatever.
Is it okay to voice it someday?
But I think right now in this day of age, it's especially when it comes to weed. You got what state is it now that's trying? Was it you that told me? Somebody told me there's a state that's like legalizing magic mushrooms.
I think Oregon said basically anything, just
everything.
You can have anything as long as it's a personal use amount.
They were, I think, one of the first ones that did the recreational. I think.
Meanwhile,
as well.
Did I tell you, by the way, that I'm moving to Oregon?
I thought I saw the moving van yeah. outside of your place.
I don't know if I forgot to tell you that or not. We'll have to figure out how to do this thing remotely moving forward.
It's certainly well, we've done it. You just tape and send it to me. You know, it's certainly a sign of the times, but that is especially in this, because every time, I think every single person that reads Junkie or listens to this podcast, when they see of a fighter getting dinged from marijuana, just shakes their head,
yeah, goes,
and
what
says,
are we doing?
What day and age are we right now? Like, this is not the early, whatever, what was it, the 30s, 40s, 50s, where they're like, you do this and you're communing with the devil. Your kids are going to be, you know, whatever.
Right.
They're going to run off with your neighbors and blah, 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 blah. You know, they had all this hysteria and mania and saying, like, the world was going to go to shit if you smoked it. And it's like, then they realize, oh, no, it's actually kind of cool.
Eric Spicely hit me up on Twitter today, and it was like I had tweeted about this,
yeah.
And he's like, it sounds like a good idea until somebody overdoses on marijuana. And then you're like, oh, that's right, because nobody can
there's,
overdose.
I've never heard of a recorded case. There is no recorded cases of an overdose.
Oh, man. All right, well, I didn't mean to make that statement. I said we wouldn't be political. That's not political, though. That's
not
just common
sense.
That's
just saying, like, hey, weed's okay. Free the weed.
All right.
Free
the
weed.
While I was back last week.
I don't know where that accent comes from either. Country boys, free the weed.
While I was back last week in the Philly Shell.
You're working on it.
2300 Arena, Philadelphia. I was working on CFFC.
Say it 2300 times and maybe it'll stick.
You were back on the grind. USC on ESPN plus 39. Hall versus Silva. I just want to get your thoughts, because I did an NF episode about it and gave my thoughts on it. But you were there, man. And I kind of want to get your thoughts, because I feel like the fallout since then has been a little bit kind of down the middle a little bit. Kind of a little bit two sides, I guess. On the one hand, you know, I think a lot of people do feel at 45 years old, Anderson Silva probably does need to be about done with it. But I feel like a lot of people also thought that Dana was being a little too harsh in his rhetoric and the way he addressed it, and that, you know, Anderson did look good. And I did think,
yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, I stood on the side for anybody that isn't a member at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow and doesn't listen to the NF episodes, which I don't know why you're not. I mean, that's just solid wrap-up content there for as little as $3 a month. That's all you need. You should be there is what I'm saying. But the way I leaned was that, listen, I do kind of understand what Dana White is saying. Like, I did think Anderson looked good. I thought he looked focused. I thought he was moving well.
Mm-hmm.
However, I did think if it was somebody that was more active and aggressive than Uriah Hall, he would have been in trouble. And I don't mean that as a shot at Uriah Hall. I'm just saying if it was somebody that was pushing the pace a little bit more, being a little bit more aggressive, I think Anderson would have had some problems. And I do think the shots that ultimately dropped Anderson and finished him were not, you know, just Francis Ngannou, Alistair Overeem-esque blows. You know, they were shots that I'm not saying that Anderson should have been able to take, but I don't know. They gave me concerns for his chin. So I don't know. I know that Dane is an easy target, and it, you know, for him to say, you know, he never should have had a fight. What was he doing? But then I saw a lot of people say, but yet you put him in a main event. So come on. I don't know. What was the feel in the room? And you guys, I know that in the media room, you know, you guys are all talking amongst yourselves and kind of getting that feel together. What did you come away thinking that? Because I see both sides. I personally don't want to see Anderson Silva step into the UFC octagon again. I don't want to see him continue to tarnish his legacy. At the same time, I don't want to stop him from making money that he may need to make to support his family.
Yeah.
And I didn't think he looked awful, but I just feel like it's bad when we're saying a guy that used to be the GOAT, now the bar is, well, he didn't look awful.
Right. But when you just like as you said there, you thought he looked good or you thought he looked okay. Like when we were watching it in the back, I remember I was talking with Oscar there. I don't remember thinking like, man, Anderson looks bad right now. I remember thinking the whole time, I was like, wow, he actually looks good. Yeah. I thought he looked decent. I mean, the way and to say that there wasn't, you know, I know Dana was criticizing and a lot of action wasn't happening. I mean, Anderson was still pushing forward a little bit in the sense, I mean, I knew that there was always going to be, and I think this happens with every fighter that fights Anderson, there's this always an extended feeling out process because if you go in there and you rush forward, which is like what you're saying, somebody that wasn't like Uriah Hall might make the decision to walk forward, but that also could be the wrong decision because
true.
When you look at a guy like, and when you look at age, it's one thing. When you look at a person like me, you clearly first think this is the
young,
the ideal
youthful,
of health.
Yes.
This is what? I'm 46.
Wow. And I would have thought no more than 25.
Exactly. So when you look at Anderson, who is 45, and one, we're very, very similar in a lot of aspects.
Body types.
Completely the body types, you know. I'm a little bit darker than him, I think, but well, maybe. No, I guess he's got me beat.
Sometimes I walk into your house and go, what's Anderson Silva doing here?
I'm like, hello, Johnny. Welcome. But no, when I watched that fight, I was like, the whole time, actually, and I actually picked Anderson because I thought this was a fight that Anderson, knowing that this could be the last one.
The motivation would be there.
I thought everything was going to be there. And I thought that
the motivation looked to be there. He did look more dialed in than I think he's been on some nights.
He was. And the fact that he was moving forward and his hands, he still had a couple slick little things. He was the first person, I think, that ever did that sort of spinning, where did he hit? Was it a calf kick? He did like a spinning back calf kick or something. I was like, oh, that's not normal.
Right.
You know, like that's not what a normal person would do. But the whole time, you know, and we've seen so many fights where, because you said like, oh, this is not a Francis Ngannou shot or whatever. Most people don't have anything like close to that. But
true.
How many fights have there been when you watch somebody that just gets clipped on the back of the ear or just on the sort of back of the side of the head,
your equilibrium,
the back of the temple,
that little temple
where when you're
ear.
Watching it, you're like, did that even hit him? Like the hit that Uriah got him with was a solid shot. I think there's definitely a sign of like, you know, a properly placed shot can drop it. And we know Uriah has those skills to do that sort of thing. Do I think his chin has diminished him? I think any person after you've taken so many shots for so many years, of course it's gonna diminish some. I think what gets to the point of where Dana and what, because we talked about it in the background, I was like, we couldn't understand where his anger seemed to come from. And it felt more like guilt, but it felt more like anybody that had a decision, because what anybody watching Anderson get knocked out felt that just moment of like, you feel like you watched like your childhood favorite like drop, and we all feel a little bit of sadness for it. But I can see where if the person that had the decision that allowed him to go in and then sees the blood, sees his face getting battered, he's like, oh, I could have stopped that. Had real anger sort of in himself, like, did I do this for the wrong reasons? Did I do whatever? But if Anderson wanted to do it, and looking at the shape that Anderson was in coming in, his plan was moving forward. And the fact that you could take a younger guy like Uriah and make him be nervous because knowing of what your skills, I can't, you know, you can't fault him for that. And I can understand why he was upset. But it was just – it threw me off how upset Dana sort of seemed, because I remember watching the fight and I didn't feel like, oh, my God, this is so completely one-sided. I don't know why Anderson was
like,
never in there.
This is embarrassing.
I never felt that until you got that knockout. But that's the nature of those kind of knockouts.
I would agree with that. Which
is that
which
those, the perfectly placed
because
shot
because we had
is
some BJ Penn fights, for instance, where we're like, this
BJ's
is uncomfortable.
What stuck out in my head.
This is uncomfortable.
BJ's exactly what jumped out. And that's when I was talking to Oscar, I was like, this didn't feel like one of those BJ fights.
I agree with that.
Where I was watching the fight and I was like, oh, my gosh, what are we watching here? Like, this is painful. I didn't feel it. It ended in it ended in an unfortunate fashion for Anderson, but if it would have went the distance and it would have stayed that same sort of fight style and that same sort of maybe a little bit more burst, but if we could see some other little new trick, because I've never seen Anderson do that sort of spinning calf kick. If there was other moments and it made it to the decision, would this discussion even be happening? It's just the fact that the way that it ended, everybody's like, oh my goodness, of course we let him go one too long, you know. One, he wanted to do it. I mean, there's no stopping. I can see where somebody that talented would be so hard to not want to do it. But I didn't feel bad. I mean, I felt bad in the sense, like, you don't want to see him get hurt.
Oh, no.
You don't want to see him get knocked out. But Anderson was in it the whole time until that last moment. And that happens to a guy that's at his first fight, a guy that's in the middle of his prime that's winning these fights. I mean, look at Yair and the Korean Zombie.
Right.
Yair was starching the zombie, and the zombie pulled out, what was it, that little
But that was something
elbow.
Special. That's what. That's
but
what
that's the thing. I mean,
I
like, it
like,
was something special, but I mean.
I don't mean to, and I'm not trying to discount Uriah. I felt like the shot was kind of run-of-the-mill, I guess. I guess I hate to see a goat get put down by a run-of-the-mill shot.
But it was still a nicely perfect, I wouldn't say, perfectly timed shot hit the right spot.
Right.
A lot of people would say that the shot that Connor knocked out Jose with, was it really the strongest shot? Was it anything? Even Connor was like, just precision. It was just precision. But that's not how he would actually say it. But but at this point, unless I have a lot more whiskey, I should not try to even attempt.
Well, I don't even remember anymore. Is it timing beats power, precision beats speed? No, timing beats speed, precision beats power.
Exactly. Something like that. Exactly. So bad, something
I can't
like that.
It right now.
But that's the whole thing. Like, that was like a shot that was not spectacular except for the sense
precision
of it
beats
was
power, timing beats speed.
It was perfectly placed shot in the right spot.
All right.
And so for this moment, I mean, yeah, is Anderson's chin maybe diminished some? Yes, but was it just? I think it was just. It was a great shot at that moment that dropped him.
So two things. The last thing I want to say about this fight. First of all, I did and I said it on NF, and I'll say it again. The cage staff, the production staff that allowed Anderson to stay in the cage as long as he wanted to while he was kind of having a moment with himself.
Yeah.
Kudos to them, because I know they got hey. Move people on, get going. You know what I mean? But they just,
well,
I mean,
it's end of the show, too.
It is.
What are they going to move?
But they all backed up. You know what I mean? It's not like, hey, we got to get this guy to his interview or whatever. Like, everybody literally just stayed away from him and gave him the time in the center of the cage. I thought that was cool because
that is cool.
You know what I mean? Like, they're not taught to, like, make decisions. They're taught to follow the you know what I mean? Like, you're around them. It's like, follow the recipe. This is what we do. You got to get him out. It's always funny to me. They're like, no, you can't walk out this way of the cage. You got to walk out that way of the cage. Like, what does it fucking matter, dude? Like, what door does
how
it
big of a D-bag?
How
big of a D-bag would you feel if you walked up and, like, tap him on the shoulder?
Bro, you got your interview.
Can you go out this gate here? Can you go out of this gate here? I know you've given us blood and tears for so many years, but
hey, bro,
not that gate.
Bro.
This one over here.
This one.
Not that close one. That's close to you right there. That's open. This one on the.
And by the way,
side.
They do that, and there is a reason for that. The traffic flow and all, but it is funny sometimes. They're like, it's the last fight. Does
so
it matter?
Ridiculous.
Does he really need to walk that way? All right.
No,
so,
our cameras are on that side, though.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So that's one thing. But the other thing is here's what I do want to say. So, and I'm interested to see where this goes. Anderson does have one fight on his contract. Dana is making it very clear he doesn't want to give it to him. This could get interesting because Dana and the UFC cannot sit on his final fight. Like, they are contractually obligated to give it to him. Now, Dana said, we had an agreement. I hope his family will tell him it's time to go. And while I support that, I'm just saying, if Anderson pushes the issue and says, no, you have to give me that fight, he is absolutely 100% within his legal rights to force Dana's hand to either say, give me the fight, pay me for the fight, or terminate my contract. Like, that is perfectly in his legal rights. So I'm kind of anxious to see how that plays out.
Like, Dana, I've done so much for you. If you want to just terminate my contract and give me my show,
that's it.
My
there's,
show.
There's three choices. Hey, they have.
I'll walk away and I won't fight. You just give me my money.
They have one fight left that they owe him, and my understanding legally is the three options are: give him the fight as he's obligated,
yep.
Pay him for the fight without him competing, or terminate his contract and allow him to walk. So we'll see what happens. And if they allow him to walk, at that time you have no matching offers. You have no, yeah. You know what I mean? There's none of that. So I mean,
well,
it's just see what happens.
Out of the three, just gut pick. You had to pick one, like, right now.
If I'm the UFC,
yeah.
I pay him and ask him not to fight.
I'd let him walk.
You'd let him walk?
Yeah. Just because, I mean, one, you're
Look
letting
at
him.
You cold-hearted,
no,
ruthless
it's not cold,
son
is it
of
cold-hearted
a-
because I'm allowing him to go make more money elsewhere. I'm not stopping him go, but I'm also – because if you give him his money – and he walks, it doesn't stop him from still going to fight.
No, that's true. That is true. I would pay him, and there would be some kind of signed agreement
that, would
that
be,
you're
that's
done.
That's the only thing that you
I'll
could
I'll pay you for this fight,
be,
but I now have an agreement.
You'd almost have to be in – but that's almost like you'd have to sign another contract.
You would. That's exactly what you'd have to do. You'd have to – I'll
point,
pay
then
you for this
could
fight.
Ask for more money. No, but think about it. It's a whole separate contract. But then at that point, they're like, well, dude, we're trying to do you a favor, you know.
Yeah, instead. But if you enter into a new contract, then – yeah, I think you shit. Yeah, I don't know how you legally do it.
Unless they say, well, we could never give you anything and you could fight us in court for it. Or we'll give you the money, but you have to agree to not do it. Or
it's
we,
tricky,
you
right?
Know.
Because, listen, Anderson Silva, when he's 50,
yeah.
will be marketable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And still be in better shape than most people.
That's what
that
I'm
are,
saying.
Are half the
I mean,
day.
If he's in, if he still looks like you at 50 –
good luck, son. You better hope. You so better get to the
that's
gym.
That's an interesting legal balance to get into. Because
I mean, get to the buffet. Sorry, get to the buffet, son.
That's an interesting legal argument. How do you get everybody on the same page? Because that whole deal before, where we give you the Chuck Liddell job, we give you the Matt Hughes job, that doesn't exist anymore.
I mean, if they want to, in their gracious big heart, cut him a check and say, son, we don't want you to fight MMA again. We're going to cut you a check, and it's probably going to be less than what his thing is, and then they could still hold the rights. We're not going to terminate your contract, but I'm going to give you this money as a token of good faith. It might not be what your fight is, but I'm going to see. That's
you'd,
and that's
you'd,
the thing.
You'd have to sign an agreement. Anderson
it's
would
so
have
tough
to sign
because,
an agreement that says,
you know,
I will not ask for another fight. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
so
you'd
tough
have
because
to.
They want to do right by him. They want to. I want to save you from yourself. But in a sense, you're stopping me from working, bro. It's the only thing I know how to do. You're not – because I would think most fighters would be like, you can't stop me from making a living, you know.
Exactly.
It's like when I left the UFC, you know, there was like, oh, well, we could try to do a no-compete. And it's like, well, no, you can't.
Yeah, you can't stop me.
You can't stop me from going to make a living, you know. Like, that's just what we do, you know. It's just the same thing for him. A fighter's going to want to fight, and it sucks, but I think – he's not the first person that we've seen fight beyond their prime, and we kind of just like, ah, remember the good old days? Remember the good old days? But we're always going to have those memories regardless because at some point they stop fighting.
It just sucks because Anderson's not even in the discussion anymore, like when people talk about it, and he should be, man. Like, dude, when he was on top.
Discussion as for what? Like
the GOAT?
Well, I mean.
He was the GOAT.
But the GOAT, what is the GOAT now has changed so much now that the GOAT now is who's the GOAT now.
Right.
Like, the GOATs that were, like, the solid GOATs that everybody still think is the GOAT, now it's just like, because it's like what, you know, at one point Anderson and GSP was, like, solid. Nobody's ever going to overtake it. We're going to have new people. And now it's like, well, I mean, they were good, but look at Khabib, you know, look at these guys. These guys are the GOATs. It's like the GOAT now is GOAT current. It's the current GOAT. Like, I think once you get to a certain point.
Curry GOAT.
I said current GOAT.
Oh, sorry.
But I see you're hungry now. But it's just so weird. Because, I mean, yeah, that whole GOAT thing now has morphed just like everything else. It doesn't feel like – we shouldn't even, like, use that phrase because they should just say who is – that's almost like what – how the GOAT is now for me is like when they say who is like the pound for pound best fighter, because typically, you know,
right.
even though
Such
they do
an argument.
Because they're just like, you're just talking about who is the greatest fighter right now.
You know what's funny is when Anderson was in his prime, and I was fortunate enough to see so many of his fights during that run, And I know there's a generation of fans that doesn't remember it or never saw it. But, like, you can't even understand what a different level this dude was on. But I remember at the time thinking, because people would say GOAT then, and I'm like, bro, this sport's only, like, 20 years old. Like, you can't be talking about a GOAT of a sport that's 20 years old. And yeah. I almost feel like we didn't give him his proper due. You know what I mean? And I feel like me personally, I didn't give him his proper due because, you know, like, you're talking about the greatest of all time of a 20-year-old sport. And I thought how irresponsible that was to try to label something like that. Like, yeah. It wasn't a label that had meaning at that time. 20 years into a sport, it doesn't have meaning. And now I kind of regret that I had that attitude because, I mean, I did soak it in. And I did, trust me, man, I did appreciate it. Like, what he did was on a different level. And I think that's part of what makes it so sad for me about seeing now where, again, the names he's lost to haven't been bad. But it's just, you know, to think about the way he was just operating on another level.
Yep.
And I kind of feel bad that I didn't give him that respect at the time as he was. And I ended up tweeting it before the fight the other day. I was like, hey, I know we're talking about Khabib and Jones, but step back for one night and just remember this guy was the GOAT before we were even debating yep. about the GOAT. You know?
Well, see, I think we can, and I'm sure I'm not the first to just think this, but the whiskey's popping it back into my head. I think – in even going with the this whole thing of like the GOAT's always more of who's like the current baddest dude around. Right now, we always say the GOAT is the greatest of all time. How about the greatest of a time? And it's still a GOAT. It's still the GOAT.
Whiskey doing well for you, sir.
Right? But think about it. And we still, that means, I mean, how can you go and look at Hoyce Gracie and say he wasn't.
He was the greatest
GOAT.
Of a time. He was.
He was the greatest of a time.
He
changed the sport. How can you ever? But
I mean, he created the sport, but he changed. He changed martial arts
right?
as a whole.
And everybody's like, "Oh, but that, he was kind of one dimensional."
And he would get waxed today. He would get absolutely waxed today.
Just absolutely. And we saw it. We saw it happen in fights where we're just like, "Oh, oh, wow, the game's really changed."
Greatest of a time.
The greatest of a time is still the GOAT. It's just the greatest. I feel like I'm maybe not the first to say it, but damn it, let's just bring that back. It's the greatest of a time, and that makes more sense.
Hey, but I came up with Philly Shell.
That's true. All right, fuck the greatest of time. If we could call him the greatest, Philly Shell.
Greatest of a time is nice, man. I like that. Well done, sir. Well done,
and
sir.
It still works. The GOAT.
All right, let's talk about this week. You and I, the first event that we covered together, man, Dana White's Contender Series. I won't break down the whole Dana White's Contender Series, but if you didn't watch it this week, it was phenomenal. It was kind of funny because there were two knockouts
crazy
that involved front
fights.
Kicks to the face. I was like, Anderson Silva tribute night.
Well, and the one guy even said it. He was like, I started envisioning the spider in my head. I started envisioning the spider. And I don't know if that was the guy that got the knockout or with it, or it was the guy that he kicked him in the face twice and then wobbled him and then
in
finished
the
it with
of
the
a
punch.
Flurry. How great was that? He was like, strike, shot, kick,
pop.
Strike, shot, kick.
And I was like, it was something. And that was another thing. It was just, they were so precise and just right on the chin. It was just, you felt literally, when you see some of these things, I've always been high on I've been high on these contender series fighters. These kids that come out, I'll just tell you that like this. A lot of times we're doing staff picks. When I look to see who is fighting on the card that we have to pick, when I look at the contender series veterans, they have a special part in my heart because these kids have always just super, super impressed me. And this weekend above a lot of weekends or weeks, the finishes were just fantastic.
Off
like
the charts.
Some of the stuff that they're incorporating, the hands looked good. The feet looked just phenomenal. But
we're
these
seeing
kick,
the evolution, man. We're seeing
it.
The evolution.
That's it. And if you guys, I'm sure people that are listening to this are already watching some of this stuff. You know, I guess it's like one of those things that even with you, you're getting to go do the cage free. So you're seeing a whole nother thing. Like, I live in the UFC Bellator primary bubble. Like that's where my world revolves. So when the contender series comes, I get introduced to people that have been, orbiting a whole different sort of regional area. I know that there's these badasses everywhere, but we just don't see them until they finally get on the major scale
right,
or whatever.
Right.
So whenever I see these cats and this stuff comes out, I'm just like, wow. Like you said, look at it evolving. Like, where have these cats been, you know? Like, some of this stuff is just fantastic. I mean, you see, like, recently we saw Philip Hawes. I mean, we've been seeing that guy around the circuit for a while, and he finally – he was able to earn his stuff in.
That was amazing.
So it's always cool when you see these cats that, you know, I'm like, wow, what is this guy? So where has he been? and then you see this fantastic stuff, and then you get them in the back, and then you find out they have an even cooler backstory. So many people in the Contender Series have had really cool, unique backstories. That if you guys aren't watching the Contender Series, it's fantastic. Like, the level of talent, the kudos to these guys finding people. On the flip side, if you have your old veteran of the UC, now all this new talent that's coming in with these Contender Series are pushing out the old school people. You know, that's the unfortunate side. As much as we're like, hey, this great new talent, but every time massive amounts of these contracts come in, they keep the roster count sort of similar, you know. So, you know,
it was a great event, great talent,
super fun.
All right, but you know what I noticed?
What?
Let me see if you noticed this.
Uh-oh.
All right, remember when we went to go get it? So, we have to get COVID tests for contenders. We have to get COVID tests for the UFC
twice a week
today. In fact, you and I just got tested today. I had test number 49 today. So on Saturday I'll have test number 50. But here's what I noticed at the Contender Series when we went to go get tested. Did you notice where we got tested?
Yeah, at the Renaissance?
Yeah. It was a really nice trailer, which used to be a tent.
Oh, you're talking about for the other one?
Yeah, at the residence.
Yeah, no, I thought you said today where we got tested.
Oh, no,
today.
Not today. No, I'm talking about the other day.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's what I took out of that. There used to be a tent there.
Yeah.
And we'd walk into a tent and they would test us and we would walk out. Now they've got a really nice trailer set up with, like, air conditioning, televisions, different rooms.
You know where that trailer was?
Where was it?
It used to be behind the Apex.
Did it really?
Yeah. If you go behind the Apex now, when you leave, they don't have those.
So that used to be the production trailer. Now the production's done.
Production. Yep.
Okay, that makes sense. Because what it said to me when I saw the trailer was this isn't quite as temporary as we thought it was going to be.
I think, yeah, but I
you know
think,
what I mean. Like, a tent says, "Hey, we're only here for a little while."
The tent had more room, though.
I mean, the tent was
had
bigger,
a lot more room.
Bigger, but when I see a tent, I think, "Hey, man, we can break this down at any time."
Yeah, I think they just
when
repurposed
I see a big trailer like
that.
Yeah,
because I always go that direction when I leave the Apex to go home. I always go that route, and normally when they had all the other big productions and stuff,
okay,
they would have they had two of those. And then some the truck trailers with, like, the satellite hookups and stuff like
and now
that.
But
when I went past it the other night, or last night, they were all gone.
They're all gone. So, I don't know if you saw that. I'm sure you saw the social media, right? The production facility is now 100% operational inside the Apex.
Yeah.
So, they no longer need anything out.
We still need to do a tour of that.
We do. Now
we need to get that 100%.
And listen, that's one of those things that I think most people will probably go, so what? Bro. You think about that. They no longer have to pay to rent a production truck. They no longer have to pay for, like, and they don't even have to schedule it. Right now, the Apex just went to another level. And again, I don't think most
now
people
understand.
Now it's
when it becomes a real, it's a money maker.
It
now.
Is a money maker. So you no longer have to have a satellite truck, which are not cheap, to sit outside and beam your content. Now, you can basically just go, I need four employees who I already have on salary anyway, come with me. We're turning on right now. We're going live. We're going to ESPN. We're going whatever. Yep. They can literally fire up fights with zero additional overhead now.
That's right, because that reminds me, because I was like, why did they get rid of the trucks? And that makes – because I forgot that they got the inside all sorted out. We should do a little another little tour of that, because that – it's completely fascinating. And that's kind of thing – I forgot to tell you that the other night when we were in the back, and always at the beginning, like, if there's ever going to be like an audio hitch or something weird – getting fed from the trucks or whatever to the tent. They always would call the truck, but like, hey, you're sending the wrong audio, blah, blah, blah. They were sending us room audio of the fight, but also of the Spanish commentary, like they were sitting in a booth next to us.
That's funny.
So one, we're like, oh, we're not hearing the program audio. And then I'm like, why am I hearing two guys talk Spanish? You know, I was like, there's – something's wrong. And then I went back to the back, and Linnea looks at me, she's like, we're working on it.
That's so funny. Brand new. They're figuring it all out. But I'm telling you, this is one of those things that I think most people won't give a lot of importance to. And I get it, man. If you're just a fight fan, what the hell do you care about the USC's production? I'm telling you,
it's
game changer.
Huge.
The Apex was already a game changer. Yeah. Now it just stepped up another level.
Well, that was the thing that they were trying to, like, oh, well, Invicta can start having fights there. Because remember when they took a tour in the past, when Zuffa Boxing gets going or some of these other things that get going, anybody, any roving production that wants to be able to go, especially now, if we don't know when the COVID thing is going to allow for people to go to an establishment and do something, you as a boxing promoter or you as a whatever promoter can't go to MGM Grand Garden Arena, or you can't go to T-Mobile. I mean, you'd have to be pretty good to go to T-Mobile anyways, but you can't go to a lot of these places. But if they can go to a place that has a production facility where you can light the event, you can shoot the event, and you can stream it out to multiple areas.
And it's literally turnkey, dude. There's no cost involved.
It's unreal.
Unbelievable. If CFFC had to leave the Philly shell.
Why would they, though?
All right, let's talk about this weekend. UFC on ESPN Plus 40 is this weekend. We'll be covering it. You and I will both be together covering that one. You'll be in the media tent. I'll be inside the Apex. So MMA Junkie will have you covered from top to bottom. Glover Teixeira, Thiago Mejia Santos in the main event. I guess the main event lost a little bit of its shine now that we know that Israel Adesanya is going to challenge next for the light heavyweight title against Jan Blachowicz. Oh, so you don't like that?
No, I mean, I think it's awesome, but I think it's purely ridiculous.
Okay.
I mean, I like the idea, but like...
All right, let me say this. Dana White, and look, Dana White was ridiculous in saying that Robert Whittaker doesn't want to fight the guy. No, Robert Whittaker said, I don't want to fight until February or March. I want to be here for the birth of my kid. I want to have the holidays with my kid.
Shame on you, Robert, for trying to do that.
I didn't like, I wasn't there, but I was watching it on the stream, and I was like, Dana, just come on, man. Just say it didn't fit our timeline. You know what I mean?
Dana,
I wish you would have said it that way.
They have let people, and that's it, because they have let some of those divisions go like a year without having a defense.
Right.
Jan just got that belt.
But
he just got that belt.
All right, but look, I'm going to say, I don't like the way Dana handled it. I have no problem with the fight. Izzy and Jan, okay, we have no clear number one contender at 185 right now, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Bohashinya was number one, clear. Whittaker is now number one, but he's saying, I need some time on the sidelines. I'm not saying, like, you know, there couldn't be some fight, Till, Hermanson, you know, that sort of thing. Like, I'm not saying that.
What's the rush?
Because,
when was that last fight?
Because Adesanya wants to stay busy. And, look, man, let's be honest. This, to me, is the bridge to Adesanya Jones. Because if Adesanya beats Jan, you can't tell me that Jon Jones isn't going to put heavyweight on the side and be like, nah, I'm going back to handle Young Buck right here. So, to me, if that's what we're getting to, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. Come on, you got to want to see Adesanya Jones.
No, I mean, I do. I still think, I'm like, there's still fights to be had. It's just silly.
All right. So this one. So I mean, but okay. But come on, man. Are you telling me?
I mean, I'd be excited to watch it.
I don't want to disrespect Glover Thiago, but Glover or Thiago versus Jan would not be as big of a fight as Adesanya versus Jan, especially knowing that Adesanya versus Jones looms on the other side.
Of course, but I mean, if you told me like Conor versus an old man in a bar, knowing that some other fighter is going to be after that, I would still be like, yeah, I'll fucking watch Conor beat an old dude's ass, like. Cool, because it's a fucking spectacle. But I mean, I don't know. I'm just like this. But I mean, it's just this rush to keep doing these crazy whatever sort of things where there's still plenty of other fighters, yes, that maybe aren't the best ones. It's just so weird because you know at
in feels certain, like we rushed into it.
That's it. In certain phases, it's like they've held out on a fight for like months, 8 months, 10 months, where we're just like, please give us something. Another like, hey, by the way, look at this other little crazy shiny object over here.
It's true, like
because it, I mean,
I will say that like because
it's just a money play for them because it means nothing.
Undefeated Israel Adesanya moving up a weight class to become a two-weight champion is a pretty special story, but yeah. It's just like against the guy that just got the title and only won it because the other guy walked away.
Yeah.
And I feel so bad. The thing I really hate about all this discussion is that I feel like no matter what we say about it, we just end up talking trash about Jan Blachowicz, which I like that guy so much.
I like him a lot.
And I feel terrible for it.
I feel terrible that he has to rush in to defend it against a guy that's not even normally in his division. That, you know, while I can see where some people are like, oh, man, he's clearly going to have the size. He's going to have the Polish power.
Legendary,
you know,
Polish power.
Blah, 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 blah. You know, like I picked that one right, too. I picked that Polish power in that one. But still, it's just so weird because it's the kind of thing that say Izzy goes up and he pulls off the victory. But then he's like, all right, I got this. I'm the two belt champ. I am the greatest. I am wonderfully looking. I'm going to change my hair color. And then I'm going to go back into my division, and I'm going to leave this belt for 8 months.
what fucking good does that do us as fans of that division?
I wouldn't say he's not going back to middleweight, but I would say that, like,
he's going to go back to middleweight. He's not going to just give it up because he gets the light heavyweight belt.
What if he did? What if he did? Jan, John, Stipe, or Ngannou, and then walked away.
But when would the middleweight belt ever get defended?
Never.
So what do they do? When at what point in that do they take the belt
away?
Hasn't
Conor McGregor taught you anything?
I know, but at what
defending, point? Defending belts is overrated, my man.
I know,
defending
but at what point in that? I love that whole scenario because I would be excited about every one of those fights.
Right.
Granted, they would only happen if he kept winning to go through them.
Sure, of course.
But at what point do they say, all right, son, you've been killing it in these things. You've been killing it. But, oh, by the way, it's been a year and a half since we've defended the middleweight belt. Can we have it back?
That makes sense. I think maybe that you would end up having to do Whitaker versus the winner of Till Hermansson in the summertime for an interim belt, if that's the path that Izzy went.
Right.
Because you let him be. I mean, I'm not saying –
because then he could still immediately come back and say, okay, you get your interim belt. I'll come back and unify it and take it back after whatever, which would be cool because then it brings him back to the division, and then it keeps that – what is it? Like the linear title or whatever. It keeps the lineage going.
So it's funny. I was talking to Submission Radio Boys about this whole scenario like earlier this week, and I was like, do you realize how stupid what we're talking about sounds right now? Like I'm going to go beat Jan, I'm going to beat John Jones, and I'm going to beat either Stipe or Ngannou. Like – it really does sound stupid, but I'm telling you right now, I will put nothing past Adesanya at this point. I will put nothing past Adesanya.
Well, I mean, especially for his ambition and his desire to keep testing himself. I mean, yeah, which is fine. And I put no fault against him wanting to fight everybody. But at some point, as the promoter, knowing – and this is the same grief I had when they first started doing two champs. It was like, if you're going to put one – if you're going to handicap a division and just say, sorry – your champ's going to go moonlight over here. Might be a while. Sorry, fellas. Just deal with it.
Right.
It just sucks for
that
division. It's frustrating. As a fan, I'm like, oh, my God, please, please, yes. Give me some wet naps. I'm just going to rub one out real quick, and I'm going to watch the fight.
You definitely have to drink whiskey every week from now on.
I know, but I feel like my voice is starting to go out. Whiskey. And I don't know if we said – I know I mentioned Jameson earlier, but – Tullamore Dew is the poison that we have tonight. It was one of the cheaper ones. But it's still tasty.
That's tasty.
Right? I think Tullamore Dew is okay.
Hey, we got to stretch our man Jay Gargiulo's money out. We don't want to just go – if we just go top shelf, he's going to be like, guys, I was trying to help you out here, and you just went and just wasted it.
Oscar might be mad. I saw the bottle of the old Prop 12. It was a couple bottles over from the old Tullamore.
Skip right over it. All right, so let's talk about this
baby. Now, if MacLife wants to sponsor us to try some Proper 12, I will gladly do a show where the whole purpose is to
just drink the whole bottle.
Oh, God. I was going to say that, and I was like, that would be very stupid.
And talk about Connor the whole time? Just build up Connor the whole time?
By the end, I'll be like, who are we talking about? As we finish
the
bottle.
I've been trying to get some of Buffer's. Buffer said he's going to hook us up with some.
Oh, that's right. Buffer's got some.
Yeah. Got to.
Every time we talk about Buffer, he's so many good stories.
Classic stories.
What did he name his drink? Alcohol?
Puncher's Chance.
I thought you were going to say pussy when you said.
The man is a hound. Leave the man alone. Glover Teixeira versus Thiago Ejhead dos Santos.
I love him.
He's the best, man. So hopefully he'll come through with a bottle of Puncher's Chance.
And maybe
we can have a little whiskey with the Buff.
Fucking A.
Be fun. All right, Glover Teixeira versus Thiago Santos. Listen, I do feel like this lost a little bit of luster because I felt like it was a number one contender fight. It could still be a number one contender fight, just not next, obviously. But I don't know. Are you feeling anything on this one? I mean, again, we did the virtual media day thing this week, which we both agree is not the greatest of all. So we haven't really got to evaluate them in person. I mean, I got to think by this time, Mejeta's knees have got to be good. I mean, this fight's been scheduled over and over, and it's been COVID delayed. I mean, I guess the questions would be around his health and his legs, but I'm assuming he's okay at this point. I ended up rolling with Mejeta in my picks, But I will say this, man.
I thought you were going to say you were rolling with it. I was like, dude, when did you start doing
you know, we jumped in, got on the mat.
I was like, bro, I just so happened to have my gi in the trunk.
Let's just do a little bit. I thought, to be honest with you, you felt a little rusty to me, if I'm being honest with you, man. I was passing the guard pretty
easy.
You were
probably taking easy on
him. I felt bad about him. I knew the knees. I didn't want to do too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's tough.
Definitely not. I ended up rolling with my picks. But I will say this, man. I feel like I've been doubting old man Glover Teixeira a lot. I mean, Glover, for years I felt he was one of the most underrated guys outside of the UFC. Then he came in and had his run, and then now he's kind of old man, and I keep doubting him, and he keeps winning.
What did he say? He's like, my grandpa says I'm not old. What was he? He said something along those lines, or at least that's how I interpreted it, because he said something while the interview was still going today. You're right. I mean, there's something about Glover. One, I think if anybody has ever talked with Glover, is probably one of the hands down nicest individuals that you will ever meet. And especially during a fight week, even when cutting weight and other stuff, he always has a smile on his face. He is probably one of the funnest dudes.
Were you in Brazil for that time that he was down there?
Yes. Well, I was down there for one of the ones, and I don't even think he was even fighting. One.
So was he
fighting.
Was he a guest fighter that time? And you know the story I'm talking. You have to know the story I'm talking. We were in Brazil, and I can't remember. And maybe I because there's been a lot of stories of Glover in Brazil, but I think he was a guest fighter. I don't think he was actually fighting that week. But we basically the UFC, in order to offset the carbon cost of their event or whatever, it's kind of the whole.
Yeah, I was there. We planted trees.
Right, planted trees. Like, yeah. But we went out there to do this, like, tree planting ceremony. Yeah. But Glover, like, helped support himself as a landscaper for years and years and years. So they basically went out there as, like, a photo op, right? I mean, the UFC is just like, hey, Glover, man, do you mind come out here? We're going to plant some trees. And you just smile and be like, I'm Glover Teixeira.
Right.
And this dude was like, nope. Let me show these people how to properly plant the tree right. And he was down there, like, helping dig holes, helping pack soil. He was showing, like, these kids, because it was, like, a school that was involved. He was, like, showing them how you properly set a tree in and how you pack the soil. And I was like, holy shit, this is so awesome.
Yeah, because I was still with the UFC for that one.
Yeah.
I remember shooting some stuff of that. Because that same trip, I think it was that same trip, he was, like, training out by the beach, and it was just like a cool visual. So I ended up getting like footage of him just sort of training in between the road and the beach, just hitting mitts and other stuff. And he was just like, whatever. I was like, hey Glover, I hope you don't mind. I was like, is this cool if I just shoot some of this for B-roll? And he's like, yeah, of course. You know, I mean, he was always gracious. So when I saw this fight, I mean, both of these guys, and that's not saying anything about like Thiago is a really, really nice guy as well.
Yeah, he is.
And when I was having a discussion with somebody earlier and I was talking about it, now that he is talking more English, I feel like he's going to really start breaking out in the U.S. because his personality, even before we could actually speak the language together, you get the sense that this guy is a nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's another guy that's smiling. I mean, you see these guys and you know that they're trained killers, but when they're not in the cage, they are some of the nicest, like, fun people. And what's interesting about Thiago is, like, you know, you knew that, but you couldn't have that real heart-to-heart sort of discussion.
Now he's reaching out,
and
trying to learn
English.
And
now you're starting to feel it because we can actually communicate. And that's no fault on him. It's because we're too lazy to learn fucking Portuguese.
That's true.
You know, that's our fault. But the thing with Glover's always had the English for so long that we've always had a connection with him. So I think most people have been able to make a bond with him because he's been around for so long and he's been so likable. So in that sense, you got two guys that are very, very likable. One that is one of these guys that I think a lot of guys in the sport respect, that still has power, still is able to really bring it. And then you got another guy that put on this amazing show of heart and talent against one of the guys that is people consider the greatest of the time.
Well done, sir.
You like that?
Didn't take place in the Philly shuttle.
Did not. But the way that he fought through.
Nah, when he showed that heart that night, we're like, every time he took a step forward, his knee just buckled. Like, he couldn't even walk forward.
And then it was like, he could easily just stop. He could quit, but he wouldn't let himself quit. And it was like, I'm getting chills thinking about it, because I think anybody, if you're put in that situation where you know the easier way out, knowing that I know it could be very upsetting and you're depressing and you're like, oh, man, I thought this was my shot, but my body's just not working. I guess that's it. He looked past that and was like, I don't care, body. I'm going to keep pushing through. I still believe that I can do this. And there was something so moving about this that a lot of people really were just like, wow, this guy is something. But now that you can actually talk with him about it, at least most of it that don't speak Portuguese, and I think as we find out more about him, I think he's ready to explode a little bit in the U.S. And I think the U.S., I think he still has – no pun intended, he still has legs to grow in the sense that he still has room to grow, you know. But in this fight, you're right, it's been a while since we've seen him. We don't know what's going to go on with his knees. Glover has a way, if he gets in there close and he's really putting that weight on him and he's maybe pushing it to where Thiago has to kind of, you know, if they're up against the cage and there is any weakness in that knees that can be exploited, mm-hmm. that can get shown. But more than likely, he's probably going to try to keep away and use that speed because he's very quick. He's very powerful. But with Glover, I mean, he doesn't have the legendary Polish power, but he still has legendary Glover power.
Yes,
he does. It's super, super tough. But this is one of those fights that I think both of us have gotten, in a sense, close, in a sense, as you will, with a fighter when you just interview him over the years. This is one of those fights that I don't take too much pleasure watching because I like both guys a lot. If I had to pick one that I like the most, sorry, Thiago, I just love Glover.
He's just such a nice guy.
He's such a nice guy. But this is another one where it's like I would feel like dog shit if they went in there and Thiago just starched Glover, just because Glover is one of these guys too that I think is just if there's great ambassadors for the sport, Glover is one of those individuals that if they had to put out and said, all right, we're going to go meet a random school group, just like they did in Brazil. We're going to meet and do something with the school group. We want something that's going to represent the brand, represent MMA, and give these kids something to walk
Can't
away
go wrong
with.
That guy.
He is the dude. You know, he is the guy. So that's not the kind of guy you want to leave the sport. But unfortunately, age and time is getting to that point. But I still think this fight, both guys – even though Thiago is coming back from an injury and even though Glover might be getting near the point where he needs to end, both of them are still fighting at a very high level that I think we're gonna have a good fight. And I don't know who – I've actually picked Thiago because knowing him on his best days recently, I think he could take out most guys.
I agree.
And
if he's not 100%
and he thinks that Glover's over, I don't think he's ever going to look past Glover. I think he's smart enough
that he's
not going to look past Glover, because if you do and Glover catches you, because people pound on Glover and he's got a hell of a chin. He's got good defense. He's got good takedown defense. He has good strong skills taking you down that you have to be wary. So you almost have to be cautious of pushing it too hard. I think this could be good. I think we're going to see a little bit of respect, so maybe it starts a little bit slow. But once it gets into it and they start knocking each other's head for a little bit, I think we're going to see a really, really good fight. I don't think we're going to see a finish here. I think it's going to go decision. I think it's going to go decision just because if Thiago doesn't get something perfect, I think he could pound on Glover, but Glover's so tough that I think he can weather a lot of damage until the very, very end.
And Glover, I think, is more threatening with the grappling game, so you have to be careful with that. And I think they're both going to be respectful of each other's power. So
I think we're going to see a lot of respect between these two, which along the lines of which most people got maybe pissy about the Anderson and Uriah. But unfortunately, that's part of the sport.
Yeah.
When these guys know each other so well and they've seen so much tape, because there's just a plethora of tape on these two individuals, they know that these guys are dangerous. So it'd be stupid to think like, oh, I'm the younger guy. I did much better against Jones than he did or something. And just think that you can walk straight in and do something. I think we're going to see a lot of respect. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the whole first round is a lot of feeling out and, you know, with some good power shots maybe in there occasionally. But I just think that Glover's too tough to get a finish unless he's caught with something perfect. I think Thiago is still too fit and too strong and a good bit younger that if Glover doesn't catch him with the perfect shot to drop him and then get on top and sort of ground and pound him to a finish, I just don't see it. I think one of them is just going to end up taking more rounds than the other one.
I don't want to break down the whole card, but I'm going to run through it real quick. Andre Arlovski versus Tanner Boser.
That's your boy.
Yeah, Arlovski.
That's
my
your boy against,
man,
the guy that you're starting to love. I know you like Tanner.
I like Tanner a lot too, man. This is tough, man. It's Andre and I go way back, and obviously been covering his career for a long time. And you know, it's tough because every time he goes out there, you know he's fighting somebody younger, somebody that's hungry. You know, somebody
everybody's
that wants to make a name off of him.
And so, you could tell that Andre is one of these guys that if people don't know, like, go watch like a ton of, like, if there's a media day that Andre's at, go to every media outlet and watch Andre's interview, and then you watch when John comes up. And I'm not just saying that because you work with me and then we do the podcast. Andre loves you, dude. Like, you guys have a good connection.
We've gone back for a long time.
Yeah, so,
man,
like, I always look forward to it because I've done interviews with Andre with different reporters, and it's not the same.
Yeah.
Like, there's a connection when you know that you've been on the scene for a long enough time and when you've interviewed somebody enough. Every time, and if you guys didn't know this because the camera isn't rolling, like, we'll roll up to set up to interview Andre, and it's like, what's up, Andre? And, like, that smile, that little sort of sly little half smile when he's like, because, and it's the kind of smile that's like he wants to talk shit to you.
Yeah,
he wants to start he wants to start teasing and do whatever. And I love it. I love it every time that I see it because it's one of those playful things that makes this whole MMA bubble that we all live in so fantastic that nobody ever gets to see, because a lot of that never makes it because we're not recording at that point. And Andre is one of the most intimidating individuals in the world, especially when you watch what he's done in fighting. I think anybody walks up to him.
Oh, but then we just walk out and he just starts talking shit to me.
He just starts talking shit and he smiles and then it's completely at ease. Like, when I walk up to him with a different reporter, it's different than I walk up because you look at him and you see him smile and do this little thing. So I know watching him for you,
it's hard,
is
man.
Tough because
it's
I know
it's one of the hardest ones,
relationship.
And I always try to stay professional, but it's like one of the hardest ones, man.
It's
and,
tough.
And
that's
and
like
and
Derek
again,
Lewis,
you know,
for me.
That's it. And you know, and again with Andre, you know he's always going against the younger, you know, hard hitting, like at heavyweight, so you can't take a shot. So, and I do like Tanner Boser a lot, man. The whole like popping a can open with his teeth was ridiculous.
Even his interviews today, I thought he was really good in his interviews of and this might sound stupid to people, but repeating the question back, he was giving like really good thoughtful answers. Like, this is the guy that understands that every moment that he's on the camera right now, if he uses it to the best of his ability, is going to do just wonders for him. I thought his, at least his energy for the media day today and some of his stuff, his interactions, he was setting himself up. So now all he needs to do is to perform. And, like, if he can do something, like, stunning against Andre, he's literally going to be one of these it guys. Just like everybody wanted to love Roy Nelson.
Right.
People loved Roy and adore Roy. But towards the end, you just weren't getting the performances that people wanted to see that would put him over the top. Tanner right now, so far, has been delivering that. And if he could do that against Andre, he's a superstar, but Andre is the killer of the young up-and-comers.
He's got some tricks up his sleeve. He's got some tricks up his sleeve.
He does.
So I love that fight.
He's a fighter that if I had to pick a fighter, and this is the whiskey making me talk.
Definitely.
If there's ever a fighter that I would see you probably tear up about, him and Cowboy, if I had to pick. Well, no, I know for sure because
right.
I know you. If there's two fighters, it's something. Even when they finally walk, or if something happened, I know those two. Those would be two that would affect you a lot.
You're actually right
for
about
sure.
That, man. The whiskey, for sure. The whiskey's got you right, man.
Dude, I'm the greatest of a time right now.
Having the greatest of a time. That's what matters,
That's
baby.
It.
That's what matters. Hey, listen, I will say this. This card has some other entertaining fights on it. At strawweight, Claudia Gadelha and Yan Xianan could be a fun fight. Brendan Allen versus Ian Heinisch, I think, could also be very good. You got Giga Chikadze in there that's going to be worth watching. Bevan Lewis versus Trevin Child. Max Griffin versus Ramiz Brahmahaj, that could be a lot of fun as well. But you got Darren Elkins in here. You got Haone Barcelos. And I don't mean to disrespect Khalid Taha, but I think Haone Barcelos is a real, real talent. And then Anthony Berchek fighting his way all the way back to the UFC. Guy had been on the outside for a long time, fighting Gustavo Lopez. So cool to see him step in last minute and return to the UFC. The only reason I'm not breaking everything down is because we've had a lot of fun catching up with Cold Coffee, and I think that's what this is more about than the fight card itself. And I don't know, man. I guess to kind of close things out, I guess I'm sure a lot of people just want to hear.
No, I need more whiskey.
How you're how you're doing, man? It's been a while. Like I said, it's been 7 weeks, and we kind of joked going in about a lot's happened. People that know, obviously you've had some great personal loss. Incredible response from the MMA community and the community in general to stand up, man, and to help you out, which I thought was pretty damn incredible to see. I know that we talk about the GoFundMe account, like financially, I know that you really needed that, but I've contended to everybody that I've talked to that as much as the finances that helped out, I feel like just the fact that you saw the community had a lot of love for you,
yeah,
probably meant a lot as well. And I knew there was no way we could talk about this at the beginning of the show, but I definitely didn't want to leave without just checking in with Cold Coffee, because I know there's a lot of people listening right now that just want to know how you're doing, man.
And you're like that interview that's like knows that a fighter's like on the border of like crying. You're like, if I just ask that one question, I'm gonna push him over the edge.
No, you know
it's right there, simmering, it's simmering under. Well, shoot, where do I first start? When you're talking about, first the outpouring from the community, and you're gonna get me fucking crying.
That's real life, man. That's real life, you know? It's all good, man. It's all good, dude. This is some crazy shit that you've had to deal with, man. And I know 2020 has been a shitty year for everybody, but...
Boy, 2020 sucked. Yeah, this is a lot harder than I thought it would be. It definitely comes in waves, but yeah. As for the support in the first sort of like day or the days after, when I did a post, and I was looking on Facebook, a lot of it was just like, "How do you occupy your mind?" Because grief is just like one of those weird things that it just at some point your body just like wants to shut down, and then like breathing feels labored and all that other sort of stuff. And that's why I understand when you see, like, you ever hear stories of someone who's like, "Oh, grandpa made it to whatever," but when grandpa passed,
grandma was right
wasn't
behind.
The same, and grandma's right behind. Yeah. Because literally you feel like your breath is like taken away, and it's like you have to find the focus to keep pushing. And so I took it upon myself. I was like, how do I just occupy my mind? Because I literally, even now, I just still sort of just feel lost and sort of swimming in my head. But afterwards, by being able to focus, I was trying to like create a photo album, which I did, and it's still like a work in progress. So it was allowed me to go back and curate a lot of these photos we took over the years and looking at all these things, and it brought joy to revisit a lot of those moments. And before I forget, I know a lot of us today, it's like the selfie world that we live in. So I encourage, if you take a lot of photos, take a lot of photos, but don't just take selfies, take photos of your loved ones, take photos of the people that you're with. Don't be afraid that if you're out and about and you're having fun, you know, it might feel awkward. You're like, "Hey, guys, wait, get together and take a picture. It might feel awkward." And it's different. I think a lot of us are like, "Oh, I could take a selfie. I'm just going to take a picture of myself right now in this moment. And I'll look back and I see myself in this moment." That's good and all. But when you take a picture of your friends and your loved ones, which all your friends are, if you haven't realized right now, your friends are your loved ones. So love them and appreciate them. Take pictures of that, because looking back on some of those pics, it was all I could do to, like, focus out of grief and, like, be happy, like, that's sort awesome. Of realizing these things. So going into the support of the community, as I was dealing with this, trying to find the pictures, my head's just swimming. Like, it's gotten better, obviously, but it's still, it comes in waves. But the support of reading from colleagues and people like the listeners, some of you that are already our patron people are already going outside of the way, and there are quite a few of you, and
you know who you are, and I don't want to – I mean, I don't need to name you, but I love you guys. Thank you for doing that. But outside that, everybody that reached out, thank you very much. I love you very much for that. It was pretty spectacular, and it got to a point where it was funny because I would be sad about Heather, which is Agent H. When I first dubbed her Agent H, it was about the matter of, like, I wasn't a big person to, like, just show my relationship. I was like, that's my personal life.
Yeah.
This is the show. This is whatever. So, but she loved being Agent H. She absolutely loved the show. She loved our listeners. She loved being whatever. So anytime that she was Agent H, she got a kick out of it. And then at that point I was like, well, Agent H is going to be here forever, whatever. So by seeing there'd be moments where I was sad for that and I was just losing it. And then I'd start getting a moment. And then I was reading the feedback from our colleagues, coworkers, listeners, people just in the sphere. And then that would overwhelm me. And then I'd cry from that, but it was a different sort of like crying. It was a matter of like, we all want to, feel that we've left a presence in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the only part I think in life where you would feel, I think, lonely at the end of days is, will people remember you? Will people remember your mark? Did you do anything to leave something in the community or in the world?
Yeah.
And part of the people reaching out, it wasn't about, I mean, the money, obviously the financial support, that's outside of it, but I don't need to talk about that. But of course that was very, very helpful and means a lot. But it was the love that I felt made me feel like I wasn't the worst individual in the world. And
you deserve it, man. I mean, listen, I obviously, as somebody that talked to you a lot along the way, man, I know how hard this is for you to talk about even now, man. I appreciate you being honest, and I hope that somebody out there, you know, can take something from this, because I know it's not easy to be, this open about things and to share your emotions in front of people. But honestly, like, as you know, man, I've tried to tell you the whole time, I was like, dude, this is natural, man. This is life. Like, this is real. And man, don't feel bad. Don't feel alone. Don't feel abnormal. You know what I mean? What you've been dealt with this year and with this especially is just unbelievable. And man, I'm proud that you're making your way through it. And hopefully us being open and honest, especially you, not me, man, I'm just sitting here, but you being open and honest, like, hopefully that can help somebody, man.
Hopefully
somebody can hear it and know, like, hey, whatever you're going through, somebody else is going through something like it.
It's okay to talk about it. And that's why I think the way that we deal with grief in, I guess what I would dub Western society,
right,
is very, very different than I think a lot of other cultures. I think a lot of what we do here is we have our get-togethers and we're very somber, but people deal with grief very privately, and it's no, I don't want to talk about it. You know, this, and oh, we don't want to ask this person how they're doing because they're mourning, they're whatever. And there's nothing wrong with dealing with it right like that, but there is something special about the sharing and the collective understanding of grief, that it is a natural part of life, and that everybody, even if without thinking that you could possibly, you don't have to think that you'll fix somebody's grief, but by being part of the grief and the healing process is almost enough. Even just the act of talking and providing an ear or whatever, just like people say, you can't, a child is raised by a community. It's not just raised by a set of parents. Everybody takes upon that burden to make some young individual become a better big individual. And it doesn't mean that the community needs to stop loving individuals once they reach adulthood. Mm-hmm. It's not like at 18 or 21, when they're able to drink and make all the bad decisions in the world, that you stop loving them. But there is something about openly working your thoughts with other people, and some of the input I got, some of the ideas of how people have dealt with grief really did sort of open my eyes and help me. And I got a lot of ideas and people talking about
different meditations and different ways that other cultures deal with it, you know, maybe differently over in Korea or in Japan, or how they might do it in other religions. And me not being a set religious sort of guy, I appreciate and like the different ways that different religions do it. And it's been interesting because I've had Christians reach out to me and give me stuff, and I'm like, thank you very much, I love it, give me more, give me more. You know, I've had other people, you know, in other religions, and people that just, you know, might be more Buddhist or more whatever, just giving me different sort of things to think about. But what I learned in the process was, instead of holding everything inside and sort of working through it with the help of everybody sort of on the outside, has been incredible. And I think it's much more healing, because honestly, the days when it, like I said, it comes in waves, and I'm sure everybody's already down now from the end of this. So hopefully
we'll bring a wave back up, man. We'll bring a wave back up.
But, you know, by people reaching out and helping you kind of work through it, because it comes in waves. There are the days that I'll cry in the shower, or I'll sit in the other room and my mind has been very anxious. And that's been the part that's been, if I would say to somebody, that is the hardest part of what's dealing with, is even you as a married man, like Heather was like my partner, and this was, we had a set path and there was no set end to it. Eventually marriage maybe was in the cards, you know, but still we had a shared path. And that was the biggest, hardest part, is feeling that shared path go away. When you know that you're comfortable in your skin, like, I go to work, I try to better my career, you better your job so that you can get that house, so you can maybe decide what you want to do on your vacations, and you're this and this. But it's not about like, oh man, it's the end of the night, I got a paycheck, let me go to the bar, let me just do whatever. I got all those days out of my system.
Right.
I was set. And then when you lose that grounding, that base part, then you're like, my head's been swimming. I've been feeling more like anxious. I get that urge to like, should I go out? Should I do something? Should I, you know, because when you sit here in the house that was our house, the house that she helped like put together, like everything here just reminds me of her. And it's interesting. But by dealing with it, with the sort of collective like grouping, that's the hardest part that it has been to deal with, is the being able to understand that while where I thought my head was going is gone, but it doesn't mean that life is gone in that direction. You could still, it's just about finding your new path forward. I lost my footing and I've been on shaky ground, but with the right focus, my goal is to find that solid ground again, find that new path forward. Still bringing along with me the good memories and the support, and with the support that's been in this community. It's so funny. I will take it to the grave. People want to say MMA is this and that and violent sport. I would beg and say, anybody, show me another sport. Show me another community of random individuals that got behind and supported a stranger that most of you have never met. You know, those that are listening to this, you know, probably feel like we all know each other, and I appreciate that, because a lot of you reached out in different ways and I felt all of that. And literally in moments when I felt shaky and, you know, you just want to just lay down and not get up, you feel the support to kind of push you forward. And that's why I tell people, if I would be able to tell people, is like, you wouldn't have that if you don't share that out there. Mm-hmm. If you keep grief private, if you keep it whatever, it's gonna, I think it, and I tell this as I try to make myself realize, it's gonna get better. You know, if you, by sharing it and reach out to people, don't be afraid and don't be embarrassed.
Because you're trying to be strong. You're trying to be macho,
be
strong. Right? Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm a man. I'm a Forders. I should be able to deal with this just fine. You know, yeah. Where's my six shooter? Blah, blah, blah.
It's right there.
It is right there. there is something that honestly, the support and the people pushing, one, it reiterates that, hey, even though I could be a dickhead, I'm not the worst person. But honestly, if you know that people out there in the world, that maybe you've never met, are willing to kind of get behind you and hope the best for you, you better take that opportunity to use that energy to do something positive and then pay it forward in some particular way.
That's awesome.
You know, so that's kind of my goal. I mean, it's that's what it's been really about now is, you know, I've actually taken the focus to sort of, you know, try to find ways to occupy my mind. Obviously, you know, you always want to get better in your craft for work, but I've been revisiting music a lot more in my life. Music used to be before I did the whole video stuff and work in sports. I played in a band in town for a lot of years. I grew up playing music, so I've started playing that. It's not like I would ever leave this, but there is something about that's very therapeutic about playing music and working some of the stuff out. And I promised Heather that I was going to write her the best song in the world. So I got some work to do. So that's kind of how I'm dealing with it. But I do want to say, and I know I dragged this along, and if any of you guys are dealing with some shit, reach out to my Twitter. Reach out to something. If you could reach out to one of us, just talk to somebody. Don't ever feel bad about talking about your grief to somebody that maybe if you don't even know, don't feel embarrassed about it. If you do have people that are willing to listen to it, I know it might feel easier to keep it inside and you feel like you're burdening somebody else with it, but you're not burdening it. That's what about having a community, about having a friends is about sharing the burden, sharing the load. And through this whole process, the people that have kind of just came out of the woodworks, I can honestly say I probably wouldn't have made it without the support. It's meant the world. And I know I said it, and if you guys probably aren't on my Facebook friends or whatever, but I said it to the people that, you know, I know we maybe have never met and we've never met in person, but anybody that has reached out and tried to support you, you are all my close friends and I love you all. And we'll get through all this shit together. And if you have issues or whatever and you want to reach out, I don't use Twitter a lot. I'm not on there a lot, but if that's the only way you can get with me, reach out and talk to somebody. Because it's easy to take your mind into dark spots when you're in grief. But you're better than that. And you can get through it and with the right team. And so luckily, it's kind of where my head's at. Just, you know, one foot in front of the other and just focus on that. So I know that was a long, drawn out.
It was well said, my man. It was well said. I know that wasn't easy to share, but I know a lot of people have been asking.
Oh, you got me crying over here.
Certainly didn't want that to happen, but a lot of people want to know how you're doing, and I figure there's no better way to tell it than for you to say it yourself. I've been telling a lot of people I think he's doing well, but as you said, it comes and goes, and I think that's, as you've explained very well, man, that's very, very natural. So hopefully that the people that I know, a lot of the people out there, because they've asked me about you, that love you, can get that update and appreciate it. And maybe, like I said, maybe even people that don't know you that well that might be going something that we don't know, maybe it helps them. So
yeah,
I appreciate sharing that. No way to move past that. So we'll probably just have some whiskey and beer after that. And
oh, we're gonna have some whiskey. I almost stopped halfway through that. I was like, I need fucking whiskey. Like, and I did forget. Like, so Sunday. I know nobody can come, but we are going to do a celebration of life of Heather. So we're actually going to get together, have some stories, have some Korean barbecue, which is a favorite of hers and mine, and we're going to send her off. So if you could, and I humbly ask you, if you're a religious person or whatever, say a prayer for her.
That's all I can do, my man. Thank you, brother. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.